Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
There have been several guides to safely reopening the economy, written by public health professionals, setting out certain guidelines, safeguards, and requirements for allowing businesses to start up again. In a lot of cases, states and counties are not meeting those guidelines, but they're reopening anyway. So we're going to talk with two of those public health professionals and ask what keeps them up at night now. Dr. Jonathan Fielding is a professor of health policy at UCLA now, but for 16 years he served as the public health director for LA County. And Jeremy Kneindike is at the Center for Global Development now, but during the Obama administration, he directed the USAID's Office of U.S. Foreign Disaster Assistance, where he led the response to the Ebola outbreak. So we'll start with Dr. Fielding. So we talk about stuff that's keeping you up at night. What specifically is keeping you up at night right now?
Well, what's bothering me most is that people aren't really being consistent and listening to what public health folks are saying in terms of the very simple things, assembly. I mean, we saw what happened in Orange County when, for one weekend, that beach was open and it was not in Los Angeles County, and there was a 22% increase in the number of cases in Orange County in the weeks following. I mean, so people's behavior has to be consistent, and we can't. They're making decisions that are not in their best interest, but they get the sense that things are getting better. So we need to make sure that people understand, even though things are getting better, the risks are still very substantial. And staying at home, mask, the issue of assembly, particularly. And I'm concerned that politics is intruding in some of these areas. For example, the issue of churches and assembly, where, in fact, if you have large numbers of people, unfortunately, you're going to be transmitting a lot of this. This is a very contagious disease, and we need to treat it like that. And it's not going to be over just because we're slowly trying to open up. But on the other hand, I am concerned that we have to balance the economic issues with the public health issues, and that's not easy.
So, Jeremy, with that set up, how do you do that? Where do you find the balance? And is the message hard to get across still about the danger when we have just basically a patchwork out there of reopenings?
Yeah, I think the notion of trying to balance these things against each other is a little bit misleading, because it kind of implies that you can take more risks on the health side that give you more benefit on the economic side. And I think that's not likely to be the case. You know, what's driving down the economy is not just the shutdown orders. It's also people's behavioral choices. It's the fact that people don't feel safe to go to restaurants. They don't feel safe to go back to shopping centers. They don't feel they can safely go back to their jobs. And so we're seeing this even in some of the states that have begun reopening kind of recklessly, in my view. So take Georgia. Georgia was late to close and early to open and did not meet any standards or metrics for reopening. Well, there was a poll in Georgia this week that showed two-thirds of the state still thinks it's not safe to go out and that they're reopening too early. And so the economy is not going to rebound as long as people feel unsafe, and people are going to feel unsafe as long as the virus is out there uncontrolled. So, you know, we really need to put a heavy focus, as the doctor said, on consistency in bringing the virus back under control. And in the long run, that's going to be the most rapid way to get the economy recovered as well. Italy and Spain, which were two of the worst hit countries in Europe, by the point in their epidemic that the U.S. is now at, about 80 days in past the real startup of the epidemic, they had seen a drop-off from their peak transmission levels of about 80% in Italy and more than 90% in Spain. We've only seen a drop over that same period about 28% in the U.S., so we are not doing enough to bring this epidemic under control. And, you know, my fear, and I guess to your original question, what keeps me up, is the idea that we're doing not quite enough to get the epidemic under control, and that's going to mean we're going to be stuck with an ongoing epidemic and an ongoing economic collapse for a very long time.
All right, so back to Dr. Feeling. There are two extremes that we're seeing on this, and one extreme says you've got to open everything back up right now. There's an undercurrent that even acknowledges that, yeah, some people are going to die, but hey, you have to, and it's only going to be the old and sick that are going to die. I mean, some people have actually come out and basically said this. But then on the other extreme, you say we've got to keep everything completely shut down, even more than we are now, until there is a vaccine. Which extreme is closer to the truth?
Not going to be comfortable until we have a vaccine, until we've achieved herd immunity, which is not going to be immediately. So I think this discomfort is probably a good thing, but people need to have the consistent behavior when they see that there has been a reduction in the number of cases and the things are opening up. They say, "Oh, gee, I don't have to worry as much anymore." And that's what bothers me, that there's a lot of people and some say, look, all the mortality, all the excess deaths are in old people and people with underlying conditions. Well, yeah, but a lot of the transmission is in younger people, even if they don't in general suffer the same risk of serious consequences. But on the other hand, I do agree that we have to get people who feel comfortable going out and doing things. And it's not just by seeing others. It's by having, in fact, the data that says, you know, you can do some things now that you probably shouldn't have done before. And we have many natural experiments going on right now because every state is different, and even parts of states are different than other parts of states. So we're going to have a lot of data to help us with this, but unfortunately, it's not always going to be in time.
Jeremy, in terms of a second wave, or as you mentioned, an ongoing problem that just continues and sticks with us, going back into lockdown, how difficult is that going to be to shut the doors again once they're, if in a modified way, already open?
Well, you know, I think that's the risk we run if we come out of the initial lockdown abruptly or carelessly. And, you know, to your question to Dr. Feeling a moment ago, I don't know of any public health professional who is saying we need to, you know, that we should be aiming or expecting to sustain a drastic lockdown until there is a vaccine. That would be failure. What I hear, you know, people in the public health community arguing for is, no, we need to build a different set of tools. We need to be able to suppress this virus without relying on lockdowns. And that means dramatic ramp-ups in testing. That means dramatic ramp-ups in contact tracing, dramatic ramp-ups in the measures we take to protect high-risk individuals and facilities, and further strengthening of our health system so they can withstand sudden surges in cases. You know, that is how we avoid indefinite lockdown while also making people feel safe enough so that the economy can pick up again. And, you know, you see some states doing that in California. California's one, particularly on testing and contact tracing, but we don't see that as a national program yet. And so, you know, that's what makes me fearful, that we're going to be stuck in this kind of a limbo because we're not pushing boldly enough to build the kind of alternate protections that enable us to safely get out of the lockdown.
Jeremy Kneindijk, Center for Global Development, and Dr. Jonathan Feeling, Professor of Health Policy at UCLA. Thanks to you both.